Mr. Fleury, would you, could you all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Mr. Fleury, could you lead us? Hoping Holly was going to be here tonight. We have a plaque for her, but since we don't, I'm going to start with comments from board members. I promised Mr. Harris I would reverse the order last meeting, and I actually remembered. Mr. Harris.
I'd just like to congratulate all the athletes for the softball, baseball, track, section titles, everything they've done. It's really, really nice. And, oh, golf. I forgot. And the golf. Yes.
That's what I was going to say. Mr. Danable.
I think it was a real privilege to go to the award ceremonies at both the Lyndhurst High School and Marysville High School regarding some of our academic students and what their futures look like. I thought that was great. And I was happy to see that the principals did such a nice job putting it together. I also had an opportunity, under duress, no, I'm not kidding, to go down to the rodeo. And I got to tell you, I actually wrote something down regarding that. I want to congratulate the Marysville rodeo team and all the participants. It is relieving to know that we have such a dedicated professional crew that is constantly striving to better the district and give us confidence in the transportation of our children, students. The department received gold stars from this trustee, and it was a privilege to watch them in action. Thank you, guys.
To reiterate that, that's not on horses, but you're talking about our buses, right?
Right. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm kidding.
Road.
Mr. Todd, congratulations on being Coach of the Year. That is quite an honor, sir. Mr. Fleury.
Under board reports, I'm going to do my CSPA report. I requested to go on new session, or new business, as the delegates all said we were going to go back and do it on new session, but that did not happen. With that being said, here's my report. CSBA met on May 17th and 18th in Sacramento, California. All CSBA staff were available to answer questions, give direction and guidance. As always, they were helpful, informal, and knowledgeable. Region 4, which I'm a member, consists of 9 counties: Glen, Tehama, Butte, Colusa, Sutter, Yuba, Nevada, Placer, and Sierra. Delegates from the 9 regions met from 7:30 to 10 to discuss what is happening in their school district and give each other support. The total state delegate assembly, comprised of approximately 255 members, met as a unit from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with a lunch break. During this time, we covered new legislation, heard reports, listened to dynamic speakers. On Sunday, we met from 8 to 12 to wrap up the session, and we got to vote electronically what position we want CSBA to take, oppose, or modify. Vernon Billy, the CSBA director, gave his semi-annual report. This year, there are hundreds of bills, but there are 110 that CSBA is going to support, oppose, or support through amendment change. Currently, there are 58 ballot measures that look like they will appear, but two that are concerned and CSBA is going to work at is the Teacher Dismissal Act, which is working in conjunction with CTA, and the Medical Malpractice Liability Award. The Teacher Dismissal Senate Bill 843, sponsored by Korea, is aligning with CTA. The bill is going to streamline the process, hopefully if it passes, and make it more cost-effective for schools. The other bill that we are opposing is the Medical Malpractice Liability Award and Drug Testing for Doctors. It is being sponsored by trial lawyers. Currently, the Medical Injury Act of 1975 was signed by Brown under his first administration. It has a cap of $250,000 on which medical malpractice can be collected. According to the California Medical Association, the cap is lower in California than other states. There is a need, according to the lawyers, they need to be able to collect more money, and so they want it to go up from $250 to $1.1 million. This is, they factored in the inflation from 75 to date. If this passes, it will cost public schools, CSPA has figured, in California, approximately $200 million in higher insurance costs. In other words, it would cost each employee from $100 to $200. Needless to say, CSPA is going to strongly oppose this. In addition to Assembly Bill 72710 by Torres, he is proposing that school board members be required to complete ethics training every 2 years. Our director, Vernon Billies, talked to the delegates was dynamic and informative. He stressed the importance of being a school board member and that we should take this responsibility seriously. He said in order to be a good, knowledgeable school board member, it takes time, effort, and awareness. He stated we must never allow ourselves to become complacent because of trust. Always monitor what you approve, ask the right questions, and always be ready to listen to the public, the people within your school system. This is what we've been elected for. The highlight of the assembly, which was really a highlight, was given by Dr. Martha Beals to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education. She was one of the Little Rock Nine that was chosen to integrate the school. She was one of the first nine people, and she related very graphically as a 15-year-old girl what it was like to be selected to go into a school that was filled with hate and bitterness. She said on the day that the students went to Little Rock High, a seven-story building on two blocks attended by 1,800 students, she was wrought with fear. They had to be escorted by the 101st Airborne Division. As they walked up the steps leading to the school, white students, community members, spit, yelled, threw rocks, made extremely derogatory racial marks. The chant was vividly remembered from the crowd was, that she remembered, was 2, 4, 6, 8, we aren't going to integrate. She went on to explain that the principal, let me see, one of her black male counterparts, which she said was a smart aleck, and he did not understand the danger they were in, was singing as he went there and thought it was funny, 4, 6, 8, 10, look again, we in. And she said he just did not understand how serious it was. At one point during the first day, they were taken to the basement by an unidentified white man. They were told, and I quote verbatim, using the N-word only, they said the real word, one of you is going to die, pick out who it's going to be. She said suddenly a white van appeared, and two white men pushed them into the van and got them out of there. It shows some people are willing to go against the flow in order to do the right thing. She said these men were her lifetime heroes. Because of the constant threats on her life and the danger around her, she was eventually sent to California and adopted by a white doctor and his family to finish her education. As you know, the battle for integration continued under the watch of President Eisenhower and the U.S. government. The talk by Martha Melba Beals was inspiring, dynamic, and yet sorrowful, and she made tremendous impact on the delegates. We graphically understood the struggle some people go through to get an education. She stated, the importance of schools we must maintain the dignity of all students and never forget the tremendous importance of being a school board member. She said you must always take it seriously because a small group can change the world. When her dynamic and thought-provoking speech ended, she got a one-minute standing ovation from everyone in the room. Here are five things that I brought back from the CSBA conference and the delegates from Region 4 this year. Board accessibility. The board should always be accessible to the employees of the district and the general public. Some districts even have board members come early, and so they can talk to the public or their employees and listen to their concerns before the board meetings. Hiring practices. Hiring should be done with committees or panel, which is something Mr. Miller suggested. It was stated that just appointing people does not build a strong district team. This was an important one. They talked about checks and balances within the nine-region group. Every district should have a system of checks and balances to avoid any appearance of impropriety and catch mistakes before they publicly occur. Vern and Billy, our director, stressed that we should always ask the right questions and make sure we are an effective governing board. He talked about governing boards that have been lulled into complacency and then gotten in trouble with impropriety, including our own CSPA group, which we all remember. Lastly, the most important job we have as school board members is evaluating our superintendent, Bernie Billy said. And those who do not clearly and honestly evaluate their superintendent often finds himself in trouble with the governing board. The annual conference is going to be held in San Francisco on December 13th through the 16th. Early registration is on June 10th through August 4th. Regular registration will be August 6th to the 12th. At this year's conference, they are asking for student talent. I brought back an information paper and gave it to Mr. Malone. He is excited about putting a group together and applying to see if they can attend the conference. In summary, it was tiring but insightful and helpful, especially the conference with our County 9 region. Now I have some concerns as a 10-year board member. We need to do our superintendent evaluation as CSPA and other districts have recommended. We need to meet in closed session without the superintendent after we receive her information of success, which we have, and talk as a board of seven preparing our yearly evaluation. That's what every district that I talk to and what we do in our 9-county region. The final evaluation needs to be prepared by the president of the board, and then the superintendent has presented this document. It should not be prepared by Lisa, who does a wonderful job in everything she does. It is the board's president's responsibility to do this. Vallejo Unified, to make it easier, hires a stenographer. Natomas Unified said they get away from the school district and they go to someone's house and put it together. One of the board members is Terry Burns, who is very high up in CSBA, that's been on the Natomas board for 28 years. When they had two schools, they now have 15 schools, and she oversaw her board the construction also. CSP later said it does not make sense the way we're doing our evaluation and the group I'm in. Frankly, we need to look at correcting this. Second concern, we need to ask the right questions. It has been stressed numerous times that we must ask the right questions to get answers, and that's from CSBA in my 9 region. It was very apparent this year that this did not happen. On February 11th, we approved a contract that was questionable at least with altered dates and new prices after the work had been done months prior. It was passed on district recommendation.
Is this for evaluation? It shouldn't be done in public?
It's not.
Personnel matters cannot be discussed. Not a closed session.
It's something that happened. It's not anything about an evaluation. It's something that happened about the questions.
Continue.
Thank you. It was passed on district recommendations that we do this by a 6-1 vote, Mr. Danable voting no. When asked for an explanation, we were unable to get one. Several of us have talked to our school district's attorney attempting to get answers, and we have been stonewalled through our own district's policy. We have tried to get an attorney at our board meeting, closed session, and this was not happen, even as late as last week. We tried to secure the district's our attorney, and again, legal maneuvers happened to keep him away from tonight's closed session. This has created a frustration because it appears we are the proverbial rubber stamps once again. In addition, I have personally lost trust over how this issue has been handled. All of us are selected to represent the public as their checks and balances of ethics and values. Again, Mr. Crawford, we need some clear-cut direction how to get an attorney at the June 24th board meeting to handle the superintendent's evaluation correctly according to CSPA. All seven of us, I believe, firmly are trying to work out a team for the betterment of our students, but roadblocks this do not enhance the education of our students when some board members have questions that are unanswered. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to getting some direction on these items. I will leave you with this. When we see something that is not right as a board, we must never forget, while it is hard to go against the flow, by being silent, we are actually approving this kind of behavior. To prevent it is to promote it. To look away is to say it's okay, and silence is affirmative. Thank you for hearing my concerns as one of seven board members.
It should be noted that in the latest CSBA newsletter that Mr. Fleury has risen quite highly in the ranks, and it's not just Marysville, but encompasses Butte County, Colusa County, and you're to be congratulated on your hard work, Mr. Fleury.
Thank you. It's a lot of work, but...
Mr. Miller.
Well, I want to address a little bit of what Jim said also. It's not only CSBA that says that, it's our own board policy. Board policy 2140 addresses the evaluation of the superintendent. And it says, prior to evaluation, the superintendent shall be responsible for preparing and distributing the board.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
May I
Mr. Lane, state your name for the record? Hello, David, it's Attorney Law.
May I ask a question?
I would be careful, as Mr. Lane has stated, when you discuss personnel matters out of the closed session element, Miller.
You're correct in that respect, but since we don't have legal counsel here, and I think it was requested that we did, I think the board voted that we had legal counsel here, and since legal counsel is not here, this is the closest thing we've got.
The board, could you give me the meeting and the time we voted for the board to have an attorney?
I'm sorry, sir. Could you speak up a little bit?
When did we decide to, as a full board, to have the attorney here?
Last meeting, sir. Matter of fact, Mr. Danable requested. His clarification question was, are we going to be able to speak to the attorney? And your answer was yes.
That would be if I did say that, if their attorney was there. Once again, I would be careful, as you as an individual board member, Mr. Miller, in speaking of personnel matters in open session when they should be in closed session, and you have been forewarned by Mr. Lane, who's an attorney of law and representing the superintendent.
You're somewhat correct, but I'm saying if we had our attorney here that was requested by this board, matter of fact, Mr. Harris voted yes, Mr. Danable voted yes. I'm sorry?
Didn't we talk to the attorney about the issue?
No, we didn't. We didn't talk to... I haven't seen an attorney here yet, Mr. Harris. I haven't seen an attorney here yet. And we may talk to the attorney about anything, Mr. Harris. It doesn't. Well, you like doing public business, don't you? You're really here for your constituents. Now, the question was at the last meeting, will the attorney be here? Excuse me.
Well, through the chair, please. Do not direct verbal assaults on another board member. I'm here. Throw it at me.
You're correct. I'm sorry. It was requested at the last meeting that the attorney be here this meeting. It makes no difference what he was here, what the request was in regard to him being here. It was voted 6-1 that he be here, and I do not see him.
Mrs. Crawford. I have a question to ask.
Mr. Danable.
I have never met Mr. Lane, I guess is his name. Is he one of our attorneys?
No, I believe he represents Superintendent Dodd.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Miller, or any concerns? If not, Mr. Boone. That ends board comments, public comments. I didn't receive any cards. Oh, excuse me. Operating engineers, Marysville Unified School District, CSEA, anyone out there wishing to speak to us? Please come up. No? Okay. And no public comments? This superintendent's report, please, Dr. Todd.
Thank you very much. As you all know, that... the Education Foundation is hosting its fourth annual Wine and Dine Under the Stars this Saturday at the Island at Ellis Lake, and I do have tickets if you are interested. And then I'd also like to extend an invitation to the board members to come next Monday into this boardroom at 9 a.m. Ryan DiGiulio, our new Assistant Soup for Business Services, will be here, and we will be having coffee and donuts and kind of a welcome to the district with the management team. That is June 2nd at 9 a.m. in this room. And I'm baking donuts, and Lisa's making coffee via Starbucks and a local bakery.
So that word making is not the right word.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. John. The consent agenda, the board is requested to approve the consent agenda items under educational services, categorical services, personnel services, and business services. Approval of minutes from the board meeting of May 13th, 2014. Will I entertain a motion, please?
If there are no additions or deletions, I make a motion to approve.
We have a motion from Mr. Boom for approval. Do I have a second?
Second.
A second from Mr. Flurry. Please announce by saying aye in favor of the club. Aye. That's unanimous. That's six with one absentee. Now we'll move on to the consent agenda. All items on a consent agenda are considered routine or have been discussed before this meeting. Should any member of the board desire to pull any item for discussion, please do so now. If not, do I have a motion? We have a motion from Mr. Harris for approval. Consent agenda, do I have a second? A second from Mr. Boom. If you're in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous with one absent. This is superintendent, the five-year charter renewal request for the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts, MCAA.
Thank you. As you noted, last meeting we had our public hearing for the five-year charter renewal request from the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts, one of our Shining Star programs. And the purpose of it coming back before you is to seek your approval for another 5 years. And Tim Malone is here, principal, and one of the founding principals, John Pimentel, is here as well. So if you have questions, they'll John. Be happy to answer. If not, I'm sure they'd be happy with you just moving straight to a vote.
John and Tim, good to see you. John, especially nice to see you again. We go back quite a while, don't we? Probably too well. Any questions for these two gentlemen? If not, I have nothing but praise from MCAA. Can't make the motion, I don't believe. We have a motion for approval, Mr. Harris, and a second for Mr. Danable. Please signify your decision by saying aye if it's yes or no. Aye. Nay. No. That passes unanimously with one absentee. Congratulations, MCAA. Keep up the great work.
Just remember, you've set that bar really high, so.
Yeah. Olive First Elementary School grantee easement for public utilities.
As it's stated in the agenda item, this is a easement agreement with the County of Yuba. Their goal is to seek a grant which will allow for overhead wiring to be placed underground and then to secure an area for a future stoplight, which would help ease the traffic coming in and out of the parking lot. And it is recommended that the board approve the easement agreement so that the county can move forward with applying for their grant. I might note that it has also been passed our legal counsel, Paul Thompson, and also the county's attorney, so they both agree on the terms of the agreement.
Any questions, board? Ms. Miller? If not, can we entertain a motion for approval on a grant deed easement for public utilities?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Fleury. Do I have a second? Second, Mr. Boom. Please signify your vote by saying aye if you're in favor. Aye.
Aye.
Nay. Any nays? Okay, that's unanimous 6-0.
Educational Services, K-8, Mathematics Adoption. Lenny, I think you're up. Ms. Tate?
Good evening. I wanted to share with you, we had approximately 30 teachers, K-8, and at the high school level, 9-12. Great representation from our special ed departments as well, and our alternative ed departments. In regards to deciding which math textbooks they would like, you have, and I'm not sure which one you'd like me to talk about, you have two agenda items before you. You have a Go Math, which would be a K-8 mathematics curriculum, and you have a 9-12 Carnegie Math curriculum that's before you. I'd love to answer any questions.
Lenny, I heard you've had quite a day, and I want to thank you for making it here. I wouldn't have done it.
You would.
I'm not going to say any more, but I'm proud of you.
I feel good right now.
If I had an extra A-plus award, I would. I'd just pull out a plaque out of my shirt. But I'll let you get out of here real quick. Any questions?
Bless your heart.
Folks, we have a motion to close the public hearing. Do I have a second? Second, Mr. Fleury. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous with one absentee. Now a motion to approve K-8 materials. Do I have a motion of approval of the new math materials? We have a motion for Mr. Boom for approval. Do I have a second? I'm just looking for a second. A second for Mr. Harris. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. 6 with one absent. I need to hold the public hearing on mathematics adoption. The purpose of this agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing for the approval of the state board adopted 2014 math curriculum.
I jumped the gun on that one. That's your 9-12 Carnegie material.
Motion to approve.
We're approving these books at this time. How can we approve something we haven't seen? I don't understand that. I haven't seen the books. I don't know if anybody on the board has seen the books. How can we approve them?
Yes.
We had a committee of 30 teachers who came together over many, many months, reviewed all of the materials, took them back to their campuses, piloted some of the materials, and this is their choice for their materials. And the funding is part of the Common Core one-time funding from the state of California. So there is funding earmarked that the board has already approved for the purchase of the K-12 math textbooks.
That still hasn't answered my question. How can we approve something that we haven't read?
The board does not sit in on those. It's up to the teachers to determine the materials that are adopted by the state and go through a rigorous process to get on the textbook adoption committee for K-8 materials.
We have no board members on the committee.
Never have.
So nobody on this board has read the books. How can we pass something that we haven't read?
Mr. Miller.
Or seen, let alone seen.
Sorry, I'm so sorry to interrupt. We've always had our committee of teachers that have come on and had those meetings. Your 9th to 12th grade teachers represented a great proportion of both of the comprehensive high schools. Almost their entire departments were on those teams. I'm not sure that having the book in front of you would have helped you trust those teachers anymore in making the decision that that's the best materials for our kiddos. So was your question, was there a board member on the team? There wasn't a board member on the team. But we absolutely would love your opinion on those books.
Mr. Miller, I just as being a former teacher, I take it that we put some trust in our math teachers to pick the correct work that they're comfortable with and then follow the guidelines of the Common Core. For me to review a math book would be, and with my limited skills in math, would be ludicrous. That's not to say you're denied the privilege of doing so.
Thank you. You know, I've been on those committees before, and you've done it for years, and it's when the teachers review it, and they bring them in front of the board, because they go through the teachers, and they know what works in the classroom. I know we did that in the Language Acts, the last adoption, and I was on that panel.
Any other questions or concerns?
Mr. Miller, would it help at all to have Muta's opinion on the books? Would it?
Would you like to hear from a teacher, Mr. Miller?
Okay. Thank you.
That must mean a no. Do I have a motion then to close the public hearing? A motion to close by Mr. Denable. Do I have a second? Second, Ms. Fleury. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
5 ayes, 1 nay. Mr. Miller, 1 absentee. Thank you, Mr. Tate. Yeah, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. I hope you get well soon, kid. We now have a motion to close public. Motion to approve. Questions? We have a motion to approve instructional materials. We have a motion by Mr. Harris. Do I have a second?
Second.
A second by Mr. Fleury. If it's yay, please signify by saying yay. Yeah. Yeah. You got me rattled. If you're opposed, say nay, please. That's unanimous, and 6-0 with 1 absentee. Business services, presentation of informational third interim budget report for the general fund. Purpose of this agenda item is to request the board review the district's informal third budget for the general fund and approve the budget revisions.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Unfortunately, it looks like you're being invited to the budget show tonight. I will try and keep my comments brief. You do have everything in front of you, but I do want to walk you through some of the changes. In this case, changes since second interim. This is technically not a third interim. It's an informational item. Because the district has such solid financial standing and is in a positive situation at second interim, a third interim is not required. But this district has traditionally taken a look as of April 30th, kind of gotten a preview of what the budget's starting to look like. So we are doing that again tonight. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about the state, the key assumptions, and go through enrollment and ADA changes, the LCFF, which you will learn to love the lingo, just as we all have, no more revenue limit. All of that learning is out the window. Talk about fund balances and next step. Again, the same graphic. We've moved from February with the ledge analyst comments down to the May revise, which came out about a week ago, and we'll be talking about that shortly. On the chart of enrollment in ADA, there was a loss of about 89 students from last year's CBEDS to this year's CBEDS, but ADA managed to maintain. Which means we increased kind of our yield, right? Out of a certain amount of enrollment in the fall, we've ended up with a little bit more of a percentage-wise of ADA than we have historically. But we're still, as you can see, on a declining trend and have been pretty much since 07-08. The enrollment projections that I will show you later, they show pretty much flat, though. I mean, we had a big drop this year, and 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, there was another big drop. And it has to give some very unequal sizes of classes that are moving through, so you kind of have some bubbles. It's kind of like moving through the snake, right, the big body. And so while we declined this year, there's a large enough kindergarten class coming in and a small enough 12th grade class going out that as you look at all your three-year averages and move it forward, it doesn't look like there's going to be a significant decline again next year. On the LCF components, again, just a few of the terms to get you used to those. There's grade span, base grants, right? There's a base grant for K3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12. There are add-ons, what we were calling add-ons because we had to call them something. Now they're called grade span adjustments for K3 CSR, class size reduction, and CTE, career tech. every site needs to strive to be at 24-1 over the next 7 years, or if they're already at 24-1, must stay below that class size. There are supplemental grants, which is an additional 20% bump times the percent of our students that are disadvantaged, and then an additional concentration grant, which is 50% of our disadvantaged percentage above 55. We're about 82-83% in our unduplicated count, which means that's the percent of our students that are either free and reduced, EL, homeless, or foster. But we may not necessarily stay at that percent. All of the projections we're using that percent for unduplicated students because we don't have a better number. But, you know, what happens in a couple of years when all of the EL students are no longer EL, or the economy recovers and either we don't have the same push to get students into the free and reduced program so that we can be serving everybody the same number of meals, and that percent goes down. There will be a significant loss of funding. It's just something we need to be aware of. We need to constantly monitor it and constantly push to know what that percent is. We're not going to falsify it. We're not going to artificially inflate it, but we always need to know at how it's trending, because that percent will dictate how our revenues are looking. Again, the calculation has not changed. I went over that last time. The second line in the, I have a pointer, but I realized you can't see where I'm pointing, so I'm not going to worry about it. The second line in the rose-shaded box shows the percent of gap funding that we're assuming for the numbers. So for current year, 11.78%, if you see that. Next year, both in January and in the May revise, the estimate is at about 28% of the new gap. So we've made progress of almost 12%. The gap is lower, is smaller. So now 28% of that gap takes us to about a third of the way toward our target. And then we're using real conservative school services assumptions for the next 2 years of about 8% of progress toward the target or funding of the gap. Here's some changes on this slide. When I talked to you at second interim, we only had our P1 ADA report, and at that time it was a significant decline in ADA. But I do want to tell you that there were changes to prior year ADA due to charter students going in and out between the charter and the district. There were increases to current year ADA for continuation and some recalculations, and now we're actually funded on the current year. We're not declining in ADA. So that is a big help. Not so much to this year's funding, but into the future, because we're using a higher base going forward. We've added LCAP priorities, budget priorities, that I'm going to talk about in a little bit, to the multi-year projection. So while we're showing all these great numbers of revenues being projected, I'm also projecting the increased expenditures that have been derived from the LCAP process and have been placed into the budget and into our multi-year projections. You may have heard that STRS costs are going to increase next year, and pretty much every year for the next 7 or so years. We're going to go from an employer rate of 8.25% to 19% over the next 7 years. PERS is going to do the same. Their increase for the next year isn't as bad, but they're still going up about 3.5% in the next 3 years. And not that their rate is being increased by 3.5%, but an additional 3.5% of payroll gets added on to the current 7% rate, or the current 11% rate. And then also I've reflected budget savings, estimated budget savings for the current year. It's a little over $1 million, and I'm really only looking at lottery funding and the targeted, which is your former EIA funding, which is now unrestricted. With those two programs alone, we've promised everybody, because of the change in funding and not knowing what our budget would look like until late last summer, that they could carry over any unused lottery or targeted monies, and we're estimating there's going to be about $1 million of that to carry over. So that'll be a temporary bump to your fund balance at the end of this year, but we'll put it into everybody's budgets next year. So I just wanted to point that out. It's not going to necessarily be, you know, money that will be available because we've promised it to the sites. So given all of that, here's an update to what the current budget looks like right now. In that first column in the shaded line, you can see the $1,040,000 of estimated budget savings coming out of the expenditure side, where it is spread amongst those categories, primarily in the 4,000, 5,000, primarily in book supplies and other services, is where most of that $1 million resides. But I just wanted to show a more accurate picture. So instead of deficit spending $950,000, I would estimate that we'll be much closer to a break-even operation when we get to the end of the year. Any questions so far?
Staff, any questions?
I know you've heard a lot. I'm trying to go fast because I know you've heard it, but if I see you glaze over, I'm going to stop and grill you here. Just let me know if you have any questions, please.
Thank you.
And then changes since second interim. Most, if you look at the changes in revenue, it's about $250,000 down. If you look at the changes in expenditures without the budget savings, it's about $250,000 also down. So the change is about $1 million, which is all due to the budget savings. Really, we have changes to the budget every day. The changes in revenue just pretty much offset the changes in expenditures, except for that budget savings number. So I just wanted to highlight that. Same graphs, and actually the percents haven't changed. I compared to second interim, and so these are very, very familiar numbers. Salaries and benefits have stayed the same percent of the budget. Multi-year assumptions, there are actually some new items in here that I'll draw your attention to. First, flat ADA and enrollment is assumed. We were kind of worried about that, what was looking like a big drop in ADA, but we're just assuming flat ADA, flat enrollment. We are reinstating the 1% contribution to deferred maintenance because we can, because we should, because we haven't. We have a lot of deferred maintenance needs that need to be addressed, so let's start setting aside. This is basically setting aside the 0.5% that the state used to give us, which is now part of LCFF, and our 0.5% match, which is also sitting in there in LCFF. So we're just saying, let's go ahead and start that 1%, move it out to the deferred maintenance fund, and take care of our buildings the way we need to. There's the increased DERS employer cost, 1.6 increase this year, or 1.25% increase going into 14-15, but for the multi-year, the next 2 years are each 1.6% increases over $500,000 each year. So over these 3 years, it's over $1.5 million of just STRS employer costs. Employee costs are going up as well, not as steeply, and the state's contribution is going up, but of course the cost to us that we are concerned about in our budget is the employer cost. PERS costs, as I mentioned, are going up over 3.5% over the next 3 years. And then we've added into the budget 3 K-3 CSR teachers to bring every school site to 24-1. We have 3 sites right now that have made progress toward 24-1 as they were required to, that are not yet there. And if we add these 3 FTEs, we can just not have to worry about it. I mean, we're tracking this literally every day because you can't have a mistake. You can't have one class, one school site that averages over 24-1. So we're going to, again, because we can, we're lucky enough to be able to provide that level of increased service at the K-3 level. And then also, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, all of the LCAP funding priorities that have arisen that will come to you at the public hearing at the next board meeting have been reflected in the budget and in the MYP. What's the result for us? Again, kind of a lot of numbers. I've tried to really simplify the top set of numbers of the 3 sets of numbers shows current year gap funding of 11.78%. So you see the percent over out to the right. And the bottom line of that top third is what that tells us is in 13-14, our progress toward the target, we get $3.8 million new. Of that, $1.399 is base. And $2.4 million is generated by the supplemental concentration percent, the neediest students. It's all going to come to us unrestricted, but in Marysville, like most of the districts I'm working with, we're going to assign an unrestricted resource to that pot of money, not knowing how the state's going to end up coming back and saying, so how did you improve learning? How did you increase your resources? It's all going to come to us in one completely unrestricted pot, every check that they send. But We don't trust that there will be no requirement to report out or to track it in the future. So for now, we're going to track the base separately from the supplemental concentration. So go down to the middle set of numbers. So for 14-15, that is a huge, beautiful number of 8.2 million, 5 million of that being supplemental concentration and 3 million being base. And you'll see later when we talk about those equity allocations what the proposals have been. And in fact, we're not even proposing that most of that be spent in 14-15, but will need to be spent, that we'll have to kind of slide it off to 15-16, 16-17 over the 3-year period of the budget year plus two. We're showing expenditures that do total all of the new monies, but we're kind of phasing it over the 3-year period. We'd hate to, you know, throw it all out there that first year that looks so healthy, and then what happens if, you know, the funding doesn't keep pace. They say there's hold harmless, right? But the hold harmless is actually at a per ADA level. So, you know, while our per ADA amount and our funding has gone up, if we continue to be in declining enrollment, we could end up with less funding in a year than the prior year, even though we're getting more per ADA, if that makes sense, or getting, you know, the same or more per ADA. So we're never guaranteed to get more chunks of money, just more per ADA. Did we get what I, you know, that we got to be careful there until we're not in a declining enrollment situation. And so some of the projected increases in costs that we are putting into the budget and into the MYP, we need to now start covering our own ROP out of our own local funding. That CTE grade span adjustment that I was talking to you about, that is to be used by districts to fund ROP on their own. There's only a 2-year maintenance of effort for the consortium that we belong to, so we will need to start funding that ourselves, and we spend $800,000 or $900,000 a year in ROP classes that supplement the schedules at the high schools, and we, to the extent we want to continue doing that, and doesn't that serve those neediest students, we definitely want to keep doing it, but we need to carve out the money on our own. We were successful in replacing a bus this year with only $25,000 match. We got the lovely bus that you toured last time, a $155,000 bus. So we are going to put two $25,000s in next year's budget, and maybe we can get two new buses and take two older buses off the street. There's a proposal to increase some site discretionary dollars, which I don't think anybody will probably have any heartburn over. The three FTEs for K-3 CSR I talked about. Instructional materials for language arts. We have the money with Common Core for the math adoption, but that's one-time money, remember, and it's all going to be spent by the end of 15, and we will continue to have adoptions that, you know, will want to participate. So there's about $400,000 or $500,000 in each of the next 2 years set aside to accumulate for a language arts adoption. Staffing increases, and you have the details in your packet, in the areas of music, vice principals, counselors, nursing, library, attendance, clerks. So those proposals, which you will have to approve, or swap out, or whatever you want to do, are all included in the numbers that we're reflecting here. And what it basically gives us, if you look at the green line, third from the bottom, is what I would consider basically a break-even budget. You know, we're looking with budget savings at about break-even this year. All the new revenue, but all the new additions and the new things that we want to do for our students, you know, a little bit more, you know, not quite a million surplus in the 1 year, not quite a million deficit the following year. If you kind of add those numbers up all the way across, that's a pretty close to a break-even budget. I will say, though, that by adding all of the things that are in the LCAP, some reinstatements, some new things, you know, education's changed since we first started cutting our budgets, and so we want to do some things a little bit differently. You know, these numbers do not reflect any compensation changes. So to the extent that that becomes a priority, which I'm sure it will, there will need to be trade-offs. And you know, obviously we never put in a budget or a projection anything for compensation until it's a done deal. So we're just kind of showing here's the things that have arisen and are at the top of the list, and the tough decision of the board will be to prioritize. And so again, here's the fund balances. So the fund balance each of those years is $9 million, give or take. But by the time you pull out your one time, your revolving in your stores, you pull out your 3%, you pull out any assignments or designations, you know, for instance, the carryover, the $1 million of $1,040,000 that we're talking about, that's going to be budget savings that we need to carry over for next year, for instance, and then the LCFF reserve that I've talked to you about before, just to make sure that the funding does come in at the levels that we're projecting. We have anywhere from 2 to 4% pretty much of unappropriated, which is still healthy. You've got your conservative reserve as far as you've got something there for the LCFF and the fact that there is no continuing appropriation. You are subject to the will of the legislature every June as to what your funding is going to be the following year. And we never... It's kind of frustrating because we've been doing, ever since AB 1200 passed in 1992, we've been doing interim reports, right? And we've been doing multi-year projections, and they're required. We have to give them to the county office, and they're good planning. We should have been doing them all along. Some districts were. We all have been doing them. It's pretty hard to plan 2 years out now when the state is really only funding us 1 year at a time. And it's kind of an interesting dilemma that, you know, it's fun to get money, which we haven't had for a long time. But remember, all of this money that we're going to get over the next 7 years is going to take us back to the 07-08 level, where we were like 45th in the nation instead of the 49th that we are now. So, I mean, it's a little of a delusion that, you know, yeah, this is great to have money coming in instead of going out, but does it solve all our problems? No. And then there's just the breakdown of fund balances, uncertainties and prudence. And again, and actually I've had to add a couple of bullet points. I think I've probably mentioned most of this. Why do we need to be conservative? Why do we need that LCFF reserve? Why do we need to make sure that we're not deficit spending right now? We are in declining enrollment. We have the Affordable Care Act out there. We haven't still implemented any implications of that maybe understand even where we may stand there if we have issues with our current plans or not. The increasing STRS and PERS costs, the increasing deferred maintenance contributions, textbook adoptions. We always want to fund our OPEB, the eventual downturn in the economy, not to be an Eeyore, but we've been told that the state's economic cycle runs in about 8 or 10 year swings, and we're on the up, even though it hasn't felt like it, and we're in like year 6 of the upswing. So we may not make it till the full implementation of LCFF before there's a downswing, and we don't even know what LCFF legislation and what that law looks like in a cutting down economy. We don't know, do deficits come back? What does that look like? Especially in a hold harmless environment. We have the LCFF reserve, we have pressure from other state programs, and we haven't been talking about this, but the loss of Prop 30 tax revenue starts in 2016, right? Because some of it was sales tax, some of it was income tax, some of it was another kind of tax. And the first one rolls off the books in 2016. That's in our MYP time frame. What's that going to look like? It pretty much takes all of that Prop 30 money to make LCFF work. Will there be an extension? Will there not be? Will there be different taxes? Who knows? So we're dealing with that through making sure that we have increased reserves and that we have conservative revenue assumptions. We're wrapping up budget development. On June 17th, there'll be a hearing on LCAP and on the public hearing on the budget. My thought is that probably on the 17th, the focus will be on the LCAP and the LCAP process and the results of the LCAP with a hearing on the budget. And then on June 24th, they're both adopted, but by then the board will have a clear understanding of what the LCAP looks like, and then you'll see the final budget that incorporates everything in the LCAP. So that's our informational third interim. Any questions?
Questions, please.
more questions?
Okay. The show will continue.
No, we won't. This requires a motion to approve the budget revisions. I did review Robert's Rules of Order, and I did the nay and yay. I'm going to formally drop that and go back to the show of hands. I seem to develop a hybrid word when I use that. So I'm just going to explain. You see a change in my motions. Do we have a motion for business services approve the budget revisions? Motion for Mr. Fleury for approval. Do I have a second? Second for Mr. Boom. All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? That's unanimous then, 6-0. Now we have discussion items. Presentation of Mary Revise information. Terry, I believe you're going to handle that, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. I will give credit for all of the information on these slides to school services. In addition, so we all go to their conference, and there are a number of online resources, and one of them is Board Ready Budget Presentation. So I just kind of pulled most of those slides over and gave them a Marysville look, and I want to give credit to them for putting the information together. So again, in January, education was the big winner. In May, education's still the big winner, and it hasn't changed that much. There is an increase of a lot of $2.4 billion in revenue. Most of that goes to covering growth in Medi-Cal costs, establishing the Rainy Day Fund, and actually covering some STRS costs. No major increases are proposed for any area of the state budget other than Medi-Cal. Let's see, and then the LCFF funding, they're still saying that they're expecting about 28% gap funding for next year. So we were able to keep those numbers consistent. There have been a lot of people that have nitpicked in the legislature and said, oh, change this, change that, and the LCFF. The governor is very committed to the plan that he came up with, the formula and the methodology that he proposed in January. So he really hasn't changed anything in the LCFF. The Rainy Day Fund, as you know, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about that and articles in the paper. The STRS, again, it was proposed to be a three-prong approach to solving the STRS problem, with most of it falling on the school districts on the employer side. But the employee's contribution will end up at, I think, 11 or 12% when all is said and done. Ours ends up at about 19, and the state goes up to about 6%. So a lot of money being contributed on behalf of each individual employee. And then, again, covering all the Medi-Cal enrollments. What's not in the budget? There's no proposal for a statewide school facilities bond for those districts that are looking for a match or are thinking about going out for a bond. There is no money to cover the increased STRS costs. Remember, they didn't change the LCFF calculation, but they added this large expense. So that's a setback for school districts. And then no additional funding for any of the mandates or Common Core, adult ed, or ROP. Again, those are all funded out of LCFF, no changes. So revenues are up, but because the money went to the Medi-Cal and STRS and Rainy Day Fund, and actually a lot of that revenue is up in 13-14, it's in the current year. So that increases this year's Prop 98, which means that that there's nothing left to increase for next year. It rolls on. All of the increase just stays flat into next year. So that's why the funding level can stay the same moving into the future. Let's see. And that's what this one talks about, the fact that the year-over-year increase isn't that great now because 13-14 funding level under the Prop 98 calculation, which of course doesn't mean that's what we get, rises. The local control funding formula, $4.5 billion for continued implementation of LCFF. And that is just a huge chunk in the budget. So once you combine this year's 11.78% gap funding and next year's 28%, we'll be over a third of the way toward full implementation. They're saying on average it's about a 10.7% increase in funding. but of course it's a unique number. Everybody's gap is different. Everybody's targeted number, base number, is the same. But since everyone's starting from their old unique revenue limit place, everybody's gap is different. But overall, statewide, a 10.7% increase. The last time we saw that was that 2000-2001, when we saw those kinds of repayments of prior deficits. The target entitlement calculation, the grade span grants are just increased by a small COLA. CSR and career tech are adjusted by that COLA, also by the base grants. And then the supplemental and concentration grant increases, as I talked about, those are based on your free and reduced foster and homeless populations and EL. Again, here's the number. What does it mean? If you take all of those state numbers, those state formulas, those calculations, here's the slide that we just looked at in the informational May revise or third interim. And again, here's some details if you're interested on the governor's proposal on STRS. We could reduce benefits, we could increase earnings, increase contributions, and that's what he's looking at, is increasing contributions. It'd be nice to be able to just, you know, wiggle your nose or snap your fingers and increase the rate of return on investments for STRS and PERS, but that's one thing not within the governor's purview to do. He's made a lot of changes and taken control of a lot of things, but he can't increase that investment rate unilaterally. So the plan right now kicks in immediately. I understand that the Senate Budget Committee is proposing a one-year deferral of that, you know, of the assistance kicking in. You know, we need to do it. Let's just start doing it. Waiting a year isn't going to make the number any better when it ends up happening. So there's the state contribution rate going from 3 to 6.3. Ours goes from 8.25 to 19, and the employee contribution rate goes from 8 to 10.25. So it goes up 2.25% over 3 years. LCAP, just a nice little summary that you can have in front of you, just what the requirements are with the 8 state priorities, how to use the funding, and what the license. This is a 3-year plan that the board is going to approve in June. However, we're to revisit it each year, and so if the funding priorities change, that can all be rolled into kind of this living document. And as we test it out, nobody's had an LCAP ever before, so we're going to pass one, and then everybody's going to kind of feel their way through the first year or two, and continually revise it. At the state level, the budget committee hearings are starting. There'll be a vote on the budget by the legislature. The governor will sign it. Remember, the last couple of years, he has signed the budget before June 30th because otherwise the legislators don't get paid. That has turned out to be quite an effective tool to let us know what our budgets are before we go home on June 30th. And then, as I mentioned, we'll adopt the LCAP and the budget. And then if there's anything material that happens at the state level after we adopt that, we are required within 45 days to come back to the board with any material budget revisions. I can't imagine anything that material that we don't know about today that'll happen, but that's the requirement. Any questions on May revise?
Well, as we all know, as the governor done in the last 3 years, June 30th, about 11:30, he'll start wheeling and dealing, and we'll get something different thrown at our faces, maybe good, maybe bad. That's a little social commentary. Gentlemen, any questions of Terry?
One quick question. The LCAP, did they bring it from another state? Has anybody ever, had they modeled it after another state or anything else?
That's a great question.
Else?
I have no idea. Do you know?
I mean, where did they come up with it at? I mean, and I was wondering if it was modeled after somebody else's, is how well is it working there?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think it probably is more organically grown as a result of the state doesn't think it can trust school districts to make good decisions. I mean, so while there's a local control funding formula, there has to be an accountability plan because the state doesn't give things that are totally unrestricted without looking for some report back on how well it worked. Now, how it's going to ultimately, you know, I mean, as you know, I mean, if we're not taking our first year of exams until next year, then it'll be the following year before you even have 2 data points to compare, and it'll really be that third year out where you can make a line and look at if you've gone up or down and have those 3 data points. So it's you know, I don't think there's going to be a lot of attention at the state or even the county office level to people's LCAPs for 3 or 4 years, because we don't know if all of the increased resources are doing anything until we can look back at some testing. But that's a good question. I'll ask a couple of people.
Well, I hope it's somebody above 45th. Any other questions? Thank you, Terry, very much.
Thank you. The next item is kind of a first. It's, you know, you at this meeting, you always get May Revise and you always get your informational third interim. But I wanted to bring to you a number of the base assumptions that we're using to build the budget. It's a lot of numbers. It's all in your packet. I'm not going to go over it all. I'm just going to kind of explain what each of the things is so that you can look at it. And then maybe at the next meeting, if you have questions, or before the next meeting, which would be awesome, you know, you can give me a call. You know, Ryan starts on Monday, and we're, you know, I've been keeping him in the loop on all of this. He has seen all of these PowerPoints. He has seen all of the numbers that have gone into all of these calculations. So if you do have questions on, you know, why are we doing it this way? Why are we calling it this? What is this? What is the long-term implication of something? We can certainly spend some time and make sure that it's all going to make sense. I'm not even saying that any of this is new or unique. I just don't think it's been presented to the board in this manner before. Obviously, there are assumptions in every budget, and we can't put it together without the business office knowing what they are. These are just some ways that I've organized them in other districts that I thought I would summarize here. So, for instance, I have a couple of pages of just some real base budget assumptions. You know, what enrollment are we using? What base funding are we using? What are we projecting for ADA? What are we projecting for state COLAs? What are we projecting for gap funding? Okay, that kind of information. What are we looking at COLAs at the federal level? Lottery. What are we using on a per ADA basis for lottery? Okay, so that information is all there. On the expenditure side, what are we looking at for hiring? Reductions in force. Luckily, we aren't doing that right now. So there's some nice zeros showing there. What are the staffing ratios by grade level? What are the site allocations, whether it's lottery or targeted funds or the new proposal for some additional LCFF funding, if $15 at the elementary level, $20 at the middle school, and $30 at the high school level. So just one place to go and look and say, you know, what is in our budget? What are our assumptions? Usually we talk you through it in a PowerPoint. We list it in a written narrative that goes along with the budget. And so those that want to see it in a numerical format, we have it that way as well. Enrollment projections, I talked about this a little bit earlier. You can see on the left-hand side of the page, on the left of that cohort number, are the actual CBEDS date enrollment projections for the district for the last 4 years. And it's been a decline every year for the last 4 years. And then these calculations are actually prepared for every school in the district. There's a similar schedule that looks just like this for every school. But then I do it at the grossed up level as well. The numbers are going to be most accurate at a higher district level because the numbers are bigger. You're going to have less funny trends at small schools. And so, you know, this is probably, the most accurate of all of the projections that we've done. And you can see on the right-hand side, it's pretty flat enrollment. This methodology of doing enrollment projections is what Mark's been doing for years. And it's only accurate to the extent that the future resembles the past, right? So if we're on a trend and we have the same kind of grade configuration and the economy stays relatively the same, and you know, you're either going to be trending up or trending down, and this is going to be very accurate. But if you're at the top of growth and then growth falls away, or you're at the bottom of your decline and you start growing, the numbers mathematically are not going to show that. So until we have a data point that shows a change in a trend, this is how we do enrollment projections. Staffing ratios, a lot of little numbers on the page here, but we take the enrollment projections, we staff at different, we have different staffing ratios by grade group. K-3 is 24 to 1, 4 through 8 is 30, or 4 through 6 is 30 to 1, middle schools are 31, and high schools are 32. It's not so simple at the middle schools and the high schools because, of course, there's prep, so you have to take into account that the teachers teach a different number of periods than the students take, so you have to change the formula up a little bit. But, again, every unified district does that same calculation at the middle schools and the high schools, depending on what their how long their prep periods are, how many of their prep periods they have. And then on the very right-hand side, you can see the over or short that the staffing ratios produce. So that top section, the last, it's in black, that 3.00 at the top of elementary, we're going to hire those 3.00 FTE for K-3. So that should take elementary right to their staffing allocations. The middle schools right now are about 4 FTE above what the ratio would strictly provide, and the high schools are actually 12 FTE above what the ratio would provide, and we do a lot of that with the ROP, and it allows you some of the smaller classes. This isn't adding any teacher. This is what we've been, how we've been staffing, and so just kind of using the same formulas, using our current staff, it shows no, we don't need to add any teachers at the middle school or the high school to stick strictly with these ratios. This form, and it's over 2 pages, and I think it's probably a little bit bigger in your board packet. It's the CalPADS form 1.17 is what they're calling it. The auditors will begin their audit of our unduplicated count, which now drives all of our supplemental concentration funding, which is more than more than our base funding additions. And so they'll pick a few schools, then they'll drill down to the report that supports this report and actually look at the student level and test free and reduced applications. They'll test EL eligibility and how we've documented that. And they do not have to test direct certifications for free and reduced. And I think about half of ours are direct certified. So those are gold. That all happens online, and the auditors don't question it. This is where we don't want any mistakes to occur. We need to make sure that we have the backup for all of these calculations because they are required by the state to extrapolate any errors and throw out revenue that's attached, if it looks like we've overstated. So, Brian Williams in IT is all over this. Penny in the business office is all over this. Amber is all over this and has done a magnificent job in making sure that we keep those free and reduced percents up there, making sure she gets as close to 100% return of data as she can get, because this has just become very important to our funding. Now here's something that I did. I was working with a colleague of mine who kind of came up with this concept, and I adjusted it for Marysville. So let's take Arboga, for instance, just because it's the first one. Okay, so their enrollment in 13-14 was 504. Going through that whole cohort enrollment projection methodology, their projection for next year would be 519. Their unduplicated count per that CalPADS 1.17 report is 72%. So 72% of their students fall in that needy, disadvantaged category. Well, if I do the 20% times the 72% and add it on, and I do the 50% of the amount of the 18% that's over 55% and add that on, they get a weighted enrollment. It's just kind of a new concept of 637. So that shows they're needier than perhaps a 519 student school that had a very low unduplicated count. And then we're using that weighted projected enrollment for certain of the additional resources that we're looking at providing. For instance, the new site discretionary money. We'll do that on a weighted enrollment basis, so those needier schools would get a higher dollar amount because they're needier, right? They have, their students have more demands. And so it was just vice principals, for instance. It makes a lot of sense because a lot of times your vice principals are, they're doing discipline or they're doing whatever the support is, there may be more support needed in the communities that have that higher percent of disadvantaged students. But teacher staffing, that would be on regular enrollment, right? Real enrollment. We're going to staff to the number of students, but there may be some things we want to allocate on that weighted average, that weighted projected enrollment. And so we've gone through that exercise for all of the schools in the district. Now, summarizing all of the various things, and you have all of the pages that support this summary, over the current year and the budget year and the two following years, which are our MYP period, we're looking at a total increase of projected increase in revenue of $15.8 million. We're looking, if you move down that first column, at spending $2.4 million of that as we used to spend EIA. That's what we're calling targeted. That's a chunk of it. Transportation is now unrestricted, and those expenditures need to be absorbed into the LCFF funding, and that's about $1.5 million. So basically this year's increased revenue covered EIA and transportation, which is kind of what it was intended to do. Okay, so those two categoricals went away. That's about what we got in new revenue this year. Classroom teachers, there's a schedule that shows where we're showing increased in addition to the K-3 CSR teachers. Certificated support staff in terms of whether it's nursing, music, VPs, those are listed, and you can see where we're looking at doing the rollout by year. Site classified support, whether it's in attendance, whether it's in library, those are on the schedule behind. And then budget allocations, some of those are things that I've talked about that we need to do. We need to do the ROP. We need to set money aside for textbook adoptions. We need to cover our step and column every year. The only new money we're getting is this money. So it needs to cover all of the things that we do that cost more money every year. Okay, so those numbers are reflected in that bottom kind of catch-all category. So it's a lot of numbers. I don't expect you to know all the numbers or even understand necessarily how we calculated them all, but just to give you a little appreciation of what's behind that budget document when you see it in June. Are there questions?
Questions?
So this is where I did expect to see the glazing over start occurring. That's fine. This is just, I know it's a lot of unusual data to look at. Yeah, it is. But I think you have it all in your packet, so take a look and let me know what you have questions about.
Terry, on behalf of all of Marysville School District, I want to thank you for all your hard work you gave us over the last few months. I appreciate
you're
it.
You're more than welcome.
Thank
it's been
you.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Those were discussion items. Mr. Boone, Mr. Fleury, and myself have had the opportunity to talk to Ryan at great length. I would really ask the other, as well as all of us, to greet him and make him feel really welcome as he arrives here on Monday and show him the good side of Marysville. If there's no other business, then I...
Mr. Crawford?
Yes.
I want to make a comment tonight.
Sure.
I think I had no clue who the superintendent's attorney was, and just standing up and saying what he said to the board is very unprofessional. If that happened within our audience, we'd have a riot. He should have followed protocol and should have introduced himself. Maybe you guys know who he is, but I had no clue.
No, it startled me. I knew him from the Elks Club years ago, but...
He should have followed the same protocol that anybody else follows, and that's walk up to the podium and identify himself.
I'm always leery of people jumping up real quick and raising their...
Yeah, I mean...
Believe me, but
just, okay.
He did what he thought he had to do, and I...
All right, well, I just...
Also,
you know,
also, Mr. President, when is it illegal to read the bylaws of this board?
I did not state that you could not read the bylaws.
That's what I was in the process of doing when you gaveled me, sir.
My only concern was that you were getting into personnel matters, and whether who it might be, and that should be handled in closed session.
Any
other
question? Yeah. We need to, as a board, continue establishing committees. I think we need to do that.
I
know that you have given that.
I've expressed that concern in every meeting. Yep. It seemed to die down after about the third committee, but I welcome volunteers to and good ideas to any committees and all committees.
And with what happened this evening, do we need to speak to our attorneys?
I'm a layman and I have no idea. If you had no other questions, gentlemen, we adjourn until June 24th.